Hi, this is Jalen for Dobbs, where tire buying is easy. At GoToDobbs.com, shop brands, sizes, pricing, and our amazing deals. With 40-plus locations, get same-day install. For tires, it's Dobbs.
For deals you can use, click on GoToDobbs.com now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right now, we will go ahead and play that press conference in its entirety here on BK and Ferrario.
And they went a different direction, and that obviously changed the outlook of what they were looking to accomplish this season and moving forward. But when I look at our team, I was probably a little too honest on where I thought we were going to be. I was trying to give everyone a look into how I viewed things, and it was brought up on a few different occasions that I didn't believe in this team or I didn't trust this team, and that wasn't what I was trying to say or get at. But I thought the guys played well. I thought we're right dead smack in the middle of the league. If we're in the other conference, we're still playing, but we're not. We're in the West. I had a meeting with our pro scouts today just projecting what it's going to take next year. I think the reason there's a less point total in the Eastern Conference is because you look at the teams that have been rebuilding or retooling. They're 6, 7, 8 years into it, and they all had about the same amount of points we did, maybe 4 or 5 less, maybe some 10 less. But there seems to be the Western Conference has teams earlier in the rebuild process, which means there's more points needed to get there because they're distributing more points through the Western Conference that they play more often. But with our team, I thought that, as I said, I thought we saw some really good things. I was extremely proud of the way the guys played against the top teams. And we have to grow and learn why we can play at a certain level against a certain group of player and organization and team, and what we have to do to prepare and to execute better against a team that maybe we don't have that fear factor in. And I'm hoping those are learning things that we're going to pick up.
Doug, can you just clarify what's happening with the head coaching position?
Yes, so I talked to Drew actually a while ago, in the last week or so, told him that he's going to be a candidate for the head coaching job. I feel that for the process, it's necessary to interview a few people. But what I told him was when we made the coaching change, I was creating a list, and the list was deep and extensive. And as I watched him perform and I watched our team perform, I started to cross names off that list. And now Drew is one of a very small number of people I want to talk to about moving forward. I thought he did a very good job. I thought he was able to put a balance of pushing and prodding to get the best team on the ice every night, with also throwing a little bit of hope out there and a blind eye to putting young players in situations they haven't been in and living with the results. And I think that's how you grow. We had some young players do some really good things, and we had some young players make young mistakes that cost us, but that's part of growth. And that's what I thought Drew did a great job of doing. And so to answer that question, Drew was a finalist for the head coaching position, and that list isn't extensive.
Doug, I was going to get into that, all part of it, but do you need some time to take before you make this decision, or do you feel like you've got a pretty good pulse of where you want to go?
I think we have a good pulse. I'm fortunate to have an inner circle of people in our organization that I trust that have a lot of experience, that we've been talking about this for a number of months on where we want to go to. And as that was going, as I said, Drew was expanding his own resume. It's not something I think is going to happen over the next 4 or 5 days. I'm not getting into specific names, but some of the names that I want to talk to aren't available. and their teams are playing, and some of the names that I want to talk to, I'm going to give a little bit of time to. So it's not something, we certainly will have a head coach in well before the draft. I'm thinking well before June 1st, but I'm not putting a timeline on it in that, because it's not an extensive group. I think when you look at maybe some of the coaches, the people in this situation, they're just starting the process and they might have 15 names and might want to talk to 8 or 9. I've whittled that down to, as I said, a very, very small number.
Would you consider consulting with the league to find out about Joel Quenneville's status?
I'm not going to get into individual names on what we're going to do on anyone, quite honestly.
What's kind of the criteria for you for the Nets head coach?
I think it's someone that we can that understands where we're at in our maturation process, that wants to push and build and create a foundation that can stand the test of time, wants to have the respect of the veteran players, but the ability for the younger players to express themselves and grab a bigger role. And that's a difficult task. I think when you can go to a certain coach and you know what their mindset is, I have the team that I think can win the Stanley Cup, and here's the guy that can get us over the next 3 or 4%. I believe in our team, but we're not at that level quite yet. So that removes a coach that would fill that criteria. So this coach, we want to come in, has an understanding of pushing and prodding and expectations of a fan base that should have expectations, but also knowing that we are in the process of doing something that's sustainable and allowing learning and growth to happen.
Doug, along those lines, you said at the beginning of the year you wanted the team to be competitive but also put the focus on the future. Now that you've had a full year to see how that played out, even though you finished outside the playoffs and you might get a middle of the first round draft pick, do you still feel like that's the best plan for the organization and sustainable moving for the next couple of years?
Yeah, only because, JR, you can do what we're doing, or you can get committed to one of the other two ways. Getting committed to winning the championship is trading those players that we've acquired. Getting into that market and trying to push with a group that we believe is in our core, in our prime, and is going to push for it. Or, like, I want to say this in politely, I'm not sure our fan base, and I'm not sure I could handle it, you know, take 15 more losses off of this season and do that for 5 more years. I'm not really sure we want to have a point total in the 50s and 60s for 4 or 5 more consecutive years to build something that might be good in 2035. We're trying to do something that's difficult, which is stay competitive and find good players and make good trades and win a championship. But I personal belief is that going the other way and being a 50 to 60 point team until 2029 to gain those assets. I mean, you look at Pittsburgh and they're at the tail end of what they did with, you know, getting Malkin and getting Crosby and getting Fleury and getting Whitney. That's 4 years. That's 4 years of top picks. Taves and Kane, you know, there's pain that goes into those things. and so I'm not in the position to think that's the direction the St. Louis Blues should go in. Obviously, I report, I make recommendations or a game plan, and I filter that upstairs, and I do show them the three different categories. One is to move our first round picks, to move our top prospects, to get into a market and get a player, or the other one is to move anyone with any value or high value and replace them with American League players. Because there's, if you took our top four players, I'll let you pick whoever they are. If you took our top four players and traded them, and you got young assets and futures, and you replace them with American Hockey League players or less, we can get to 50 points. I can get us there. Trust me. it's getting us out of that after is the hard part. But I just don't think that's where we need to go. So that's a long, long answer to a simple question. We're going to stay with the path we're on.
You're listening to the live end of season press conference from Blues General Manager Doug Armstrong on 101 ESPN.
How do you guys improve enough to be a playoff team next year?
Well, it's going to come from internal growth, as we talked about a second ago, is that I was probably too open a year ago on a time length of retooling or what it's going to take. The history goes, though, in 22, 23, I thought we were a good team that underperformed, but I thought 23, 24 was going to be the first year of the next wave, because the players that if we had to perform to their maximum ability, they would have gone on a playoff run last year, and then they'd be free agents and they'd be gone. So this was year one of something that's not going to be finished after year one. And so we can look to be prudent in the free agent market. We need internal growth. We need, some of our players, veteran players, to play a little bit better. Some of our younger players to grow a little bit. The coach has to get a little better. The manager has to get a little bit better. But we're not going to reinvent the wheel. There is a plan in place, and I'm willing to stick through that plan. And one of the things we talked about, I think, in September is how do you judge a good season? And I understand our fan base, and I do understand that they want to see W's. They don't want to see the old college try. But when I evaluate it, I did see a lot of positives. I saw a young player like Jake Neighbors go from a call-up player to a fourth-line player to almost a 30-goal scorer. I saw Joel Hofer go to his first year in the NHL. Looks like a pretty good goalie. We saw Scott Prunovich play, and now we know what we have and closer to what we have. So I found positive things in outside of wins and losses that I think we can build off of.
Do you think the roster will be largely the same, though? Is that your expectation?
I don't want to say something that's going to come back I'm going to answer to in September. I just think that we're on a path, and we're willing to stick with that path. And if we can improve our team under the guidelines that we think gives our long-term outlook and our long-term goals the best chance to have success, we'll do it.
You talk a lot about the internal growth. Oh, one player that gets talked about a lot is Jordan Kyrou. How do you assess his season, and what kind of growth would you like to see from him going into next season?
Yeah, another 30-goal season. Obviously, I thought he went through stretches this year where the puck didn't go in for him at the start of the year. I think if you look at all the fancy stats, he had a lot of chances, and they weren't going in, and then they start going in, and everybody gets off his back a little bit. So I think consistency maybe is something, but he's a game-changing player and a game-breaking player that has become a lightning rod for whatever reason. But I sat up here, and I'm going to say 2017, and Jay Bouwmeester was a lightning rod, and everybody hated him. And then he left our franchise, and everyone thought, how are we going to live without Jay Bouwmeester? So these are ebbs and flows. A year ago, Colton Parenko and Jordan Binnington were finished, and now they're not finished. So I can't get sucked into this daily, he's a good player, he's a bad player thing that's there. I have to have a longer term approach. And if you want to have a relationship with someone, you better be willing to go through tough times if you want to go through good times with them. If you're only committed to someone through the good times, it's going to be a difficult relationship for you to be happy in.
Coach, you talked, or not coach, I mean, you talk
that
about...
That will never happen, Coach, by the way.
you talked about internal leadership, and a big part of that is the captain of the team. How would you assess, maybe from your point of view, how Braden Schenn did this year, leading this group, especially through, you know, a coaching change and some struggles?
Yeah, I thought he did a really good job. I think the one thing that it, when I look back on and when I talk to him, and is that breathe, enjoy the process, and don't put too much of this on yourself. I thought he cares so much about the team and so much about every individual that it's hard to do all that and still be the best you can be on the ice. And I thought he did a great job at it. I think next year he's gonna be able to pick his battles a little bit more, pick his battles with the manager, pick his battles with the coach, pick his battles with his teammates a little better, and that just comes from maturation. But a proud player and a Stanley Cup champion that's asked to be the captain of a team that's going through a transition, it's difficult. And then you throw in a coaching change mid-season, it's not like I made this easy on him. And it wasn't by, like, the, I didn't say, let's name Schenner captain and see how hard I can make it on him. But I'm not surprised that it ended up where there was a lot of turmoil that he had to deal with. And I thought he did a really good job. And I think, quite honestly, with the support of Robert Thomas and Parenko and Falk, that eased that for him. And I think they've all grown, and they're all going to get better at it. And next year is going to be way easier for them than this year was. And that's growth.
Doug, you mentioned when you made the coaching change that you wanted accountability and competitiveness from the Nets head coach. How do you think Drew handled that?
I thought he did a nice job at that. And the last time I was sitting in here, we were talking about the coach, and it was a coaching change. And then I reflect back on what was said after that. But, you know, change came because there was a feeling that the message wasn't getting through. And it was frustrating to hear that because of how much respect I have for Craig. But I think also that change made everybody get a little more laser focused in every area. It made the manager get more focused. It made the players get more focused. And I thought those were natural byproducts of competitiveness and opportunity. And I thought Drew provided both of those things. And I thought he did a good job at that. But I did think that accountability was taken up. But I think that was going to come regardless. It wasn't really Drew that took it up. It was the players that understood that they let a guy that everybody in the city loved and they love playing for and I love working with, we let him down. But that's evolution of sport. That's not new to any one organization. So I thought the players did a great job of seizing that. And I think we might have been 11 games over 500 with Drew, and that's good coaching, but that's also laser focus of players wanting to be different than they were before.
You're listening to the live end of season press conference from Blues general manager Doug Armstrong on 101 ESPN.
Defense was better this year. I know last year you said that if we watch the same thing this year, there's definitely going to be changes in 24-25. How do you evaluate the defense this year, and do you anticipate trying to make it look any different?
It looked a little different because Scotty was healthy and we got him a lot of games and we saw what that looks like. We're going to look to see if we can push and prod and improve, but there was an improvement back there. I think some of the improvement came from how our number one defenseman was perceived at the end of last year and the way he's perceived now. I assume it's different. The questions are different at least. So I think Tucker showed he can help us out a little bit. I think Letty and Parenko look like they can be a good pair. I was really excited for Kessel's growth and improvement. A player that we weren't talking about at the start of last year came in and looks like a legitimate NHL player. So there's going to be internal growth, and if we can improve it other ways, we'll look at doing it. Again, I don't want to say anything that I can't back up on change.
Doug, with where you guys are at as a franchise, do you expect to be a cap team next year?
It's not a goal not to be, and it's not a goal to be. You know, like if there's a player, if there's a situation that I can take to Mr. Stillman and he signs off on that adds a player with X amount of millions of dollars that takes us to the cap, I'll do it. But I'll get no benefit of spending money poorly so I can say next year, well, look at we're at the cap. You know, like we're trying. Trying stupid isn't trying. That's just being stupid. And so if the owners have never said, no, you can't spend, my job is to provide a roadmap where it's spending wisely.
Doug, did any of the prospects, and we know you've never rushed any of these guys to get here sooner than they should be, did any of them have years this year where some of them may expedite the process, though?
Yeah, I would say from last year's draft, like Bolduc and Dean and Kessel are here now. They finished here, so I'm going to exclude those guys. I can talk to them after if you want. But last year's draft was really the first draft of whatever the working in the next generation. And the one player that looks like he's going to push for a really good look in training camp is Dvorsky. Partly because he's a North American. The other guys are in Sweden. But Dvorsky, when I saw what he did at the World Junior, what we see him doing against his peer group in the Ontario Hockey League, and how we've seen players that do what he did in the Ontario League progress to the NHL, there's a path there. But that path won't be rushed, so we can say that we have young players in the NHL. And that's for Bolduc, and that's for Dean, and that's for Kessel, quite honestly. Like, they ended the season here. The only way they guarantee they started here next year is to have a great summer and a great training camp, because, you know, we have to push them to be better than they were when we ended the year, and it's up to them to do the work. Now, I have the utmost faith they're going to do it, but this isn't a charity case that we're running here in the sense that to show growth, we have to put players in the NHL that aren't ready for it. I think Lou, you and I have talked about this before. The NHL fails as many players as players fail the NHL, and I don't want to fail these guys.
And Doug, does the Snuggerud decision affect your kind of future planning? Was he kind of in next year's mix ideally?
He would have been in the mix to the level that Bolduc and Dean are, that there's an expectation that they're going to give. There's not a hope that they make the team. There's an expectation they're going to give every opportunity to. So he would have been in that group ahead of the Stenberg Lindstein, where they're a year or two away. Snuggy's going to be in mini this time next year, one way or the other, in the Final Four in a Blues uniform.
Doug, your recent history of hiring head coaches is guys with a previous NHL experience. Is that a prerequisite for the search here?
No.
Two questions. One, you brought up Dvorsky. How much do you think he benefited? I mean, obviously the numbers were great, but going from Europe to playing junior this year?
I thought it was a great benefit. And JR, that's a really good question, because you never know how it's going to work. The one thing I don't like about, but I said don't like, that concern you is Dvorsky's had five different coaches in the last 5 years and five different cities and five different leagues. Like, this kid's had no stability. And it's because he's better. He gets better every year. And so he went to a situation he thought was going to be really good in Sweden. It was really bad. And then, so you're hoping it's better when he gets to the OHL, and he made it a great situation. So the way that he was perceived in his draft year as a top player, top 10 pick, that's where we took him. They usually have good years in the OHL, and he certainly didn't disappoint. And I think there's going to be debate if the draft was held again this year, where would he go? Probably, in our opinion, maybe a little bit higher, but certainly no lower.
I just have one other quick one. I know this isn't on your radar. Mm-hmm. You know, we get asked this question a lot, so I figured I'd pass it off to you. The option of a buyout, you know, with players that you have, do you even consider that this offseason with any of your players?
Yeah, I consider it every year. This isn't an ego thing where we don't buy somebody out. It has to make economic sense. Not just economic sense. There has to be a plan to have a better team because you're doing it. And it's it's my fault because I do make statements and then I don't retract them or I don't like change the like it's like, well, we don't offer no move clauses. Well, that's a lie. Like I said, I don't like to do it. And we don't offer signing bonus. Well, that's a lie. We've done it. So we've done it in the past. You know, when I say that's not our first preference to do these things. So it's not our first preference to buy players out. Maybe this is the ego part. It is a business and it's hard. I don't know. It's just like my kids just say, like, give me $1,000. I want to burn it. Like, I'm just like, I'm not going to give you $1,000, you know, and when you buy a player out, it's like burning money. And so I have an obligation to make sure it's the right thing to do. But no, nothing is off the table.
Another question or two?
Doug, on divorce, do you see eligible to go to the AHL next year?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Just because he was drafted from Europe. Yeah.
Would that be a logical step for him? I mean, seeing what he's done in the OHL and if he's not here in St. Louis?
He thinks he's going to be here in St. Louis, and I'm not going to dash that dream. But if it's not, we'll find a nice home for him.
What about your plans for Pavel Buchnevich? Will you approach him over the summer and try to lock him up or see how the season plays out?
Yeah, we'll approach him. We'll approach him. I'm a big Pavel fan. Again, with free agency, it's a two-way street. He's just turned, I think, 29 yesterday. You know, if I was Pavel, I'd want to sit with the manager and talk to him. Not as a, he's at the age now where he should ask me hard questions about the direction of this organization, because he's at the age now where I assume winning is going to be very important, and he wants to know how quickly we can win. That, you know, because he's going to get his money. You know, he's good enough. He's going to get his money. So, I would like him to be here. I have to sell him on why. And then we have to sell each other on why we can be comfortably uncomfortable with the financial deal that we make. But I'm a big Pavel fan.
So just when you look at the 5-on-5 possession numbers from the season, what did you think was missing from your team at even strength there?
The one area where I like to see us get more comfortable at is putting pucks on the net from high scoring areas. I think as you guys that follow us closely, you'll see us get the puck into a high scoring area, then pass it out of it for a better play. This league isn't always about a better play. And the other area where I think we can improve, and we saw it with Jake Neighbors and Torpachenko to a level, you got to go to the hard areas to score. Like Jake Neighbors, what did he get? How many goals? 27 goals. From me to this microphone away, total distance. Like he goes to the areas to score that are hard. And so those numbers, I think if we put pucks at the net and go to that net with greater urgency and frequency, that's going to improve. I don't think possession time is important, but if it's possession time without any results, it's just hanging onto the puck longer before you give it away.
When you talk about those types of players, is that kind of the characteristic that you're looking for free agents or trades or what have you to bring in?
Well, we want to get out of our own players first, but yeah, I think, you know, what we talk about, and this is, people are going to say this is a good stat or a bad stat since 08. I don't think, you know, that we have one Hall of Famer in our group, but we've had a lot of wins. I know how the St. Louis Blues are built. Or I know how we have to be built to have success. Unless we want to go, what Jay and I asked about earlier, unless we want to go to the bottom for a number of years, that's sort of where you get your Hall of Famers from. Like, you have a much greater likelihood to get a Hall of Famer for there. So We need strength in numbers, and strength in numbers comes from Bobby Plager playing for the jersey or the crest on the front and the name on the back. That's always been the identity of the Blues since I've been here. That's how we've had our success, and that's the path I hope that we take moving forward, because as I said, it's a lot less. Like I'd love for Dvorsky to be a Hall of Famer. I'd love for Robert Thomas to be a Hall of Famer. I'd love for whoever to be. Just the reality is that it usually comes like from 1, 2, or 3 in the draft, and I don't want to pick that guy. No, I'm not afraid of winning the lottery if they want to do that part of it, but I don't want to earn it. How's that?
Just
one very minor one on Theo Lindstein. Obviously, you guys signed him. What's kind of the path for him moving forward into next year as well?
I would see most of those guys going back to Europe and continuing to grow there. There is an agreement in the IIHF too that they have to go where they can go back. They will go back. Again, we're not looking to rush guys in. The American League's a hard league to play in, not because it's a hard league in the sense that there's a lot of downtime for an 18, 19-year-old. And I just say we're talking about Dvorsky doing it if he's not in the NHL. I think he can grow just from him and Stenberg, and that group can grow very well where they're at. Now, if things change and they want to come over here and give it a shot, like, we're not going to say no. But, again, we're playing the long game here.
Last question.
Yep. Doug, along those lines, with the guys in Europe, how much differently do you have to evaluate what they're doing over there as opposed to the guys you have over here in North America?
I don't think any differently. Like, the harder part, it's harder. Like, we see all their shifts. We get their shifts every week. We watch every shift. It's harder to get to see them. And it's harder to – their mindset of – how much they practice, how much they play is different than junior hockey. The hard part for the young top European players at 18 and 19 is they play in men's league and they don't get much ice time. And then they don't want to go down to the league to get more ice time because they feel they've underperformed. It's a delicate balance for those players. And what we want to see is continued growth, and that's where our development staff comes in. The hard part, it's not the NFL where you draft them and you see them and you know they're there and you can say it's success or failure within a year. These, like, and I projected a chart out to our ownership group, and it wasn't just our players. Like, when do players that are drafted within 15% plus or minus play their 11th game, their 50th game, their 100th game? It takes a while, and we're playing the long game. Again, thanks everybody for your support this year, and